Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Boat Briefing podcast, which is sponsored by KVH, the service which creates innovative connectivity solutions for customers on land, sea, and air around the globe. KVH is a global leader in mobile connectivity, content, and value-added services with technology designed to enable a mobile world and keep mariners always connected. To find out more, visit www.kvh.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here with me today in the podcast studio is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, who is fresh from a Greek adventure.
I am fresh from a Greek adventure. Been having a lovely time in Antiparos.
I've never been to Antiparos. Tell me about Antiparos.
Oh, Antiparos, it was lovely, I have to say. I'd seen it some years ago from a boat, you know, gazed at it from a yacht and thought, wow, that looks like an amazing place, but hadn't actually been on land. So it was a real treat to go, especially because at the time it was pouring with rain in London and super hot in Greece. But it was wonderful. And I was there, of course, because it was the first ever Cyclades Cup, first regatta of its kind in the area, which was set up by Ilia Rigas, who's the owner of Almira 2, very beautiful Perini. And yeah, stunning set up for a regatta, you know, beautiful turquoise waters, super clear, picture postcard. And the island itself is quite interesting because it has that kind of Greek laid back vibe. But actually, you know, you look on the little kind of high street, it's got all these very tall buildings with little passageways through them to stop the kind of wind rattling around. But you look down the little high street and there's still a Balenciaga and a Prada store. So it feels quite kind of relaxed and chilled out, but it's also a very kind of chic area. And yeah, it was absolutely boiling in Greece. It was 43 degrees, 44 degrees while we were there. So perfect time to be out on the water.
Decent wind?
Yeah, well, that kind of complicated the racing somewhat because everyone's kind of waiting to hear, you know, what time the race was going to be on there. It was Friday and Saturday that they did the racing, if I remember correctly. You know, everyone kind of wasn't sure how much wind there was going to be. The wind was a lot better on the second day than the first. And it meant racing quite early on the first day to kind of make the most of the wind. I think the race had to finish slightly early because it was all just kind of petering out. And some of the slower boats were, you know, tootling along at the back and taking a while to get there.
Sometimes that's when the race committee call a shortened course. That is the best news some days, because if the breeze drops, you're on a big, heavy boat.
Yeah.
Just creeping along at one or two knots.
Yeah.
Unless they get the beer out, it can be quite a painful
experience.
Well,
I think there was quite a bit of that going on. There was definitely a feeling that some people kind of coasted into the evening drinks, having started quite a few hours before. But it was an interesting race in that respect, because there were so many different boats of different sizes, completely different kind of builds and models, some of which with competitive race crews on board, some much more amateur. So it was pretty difficult. They had a difficult job, I think, classifying them and trying to make things as equal as possible.
There was a good mix of boats, though, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Like everything from, you know, big Perinis or slightly more classic boats to, you know, Win-Win, the Baltic and Barong D as well.
Yeah.
So kind of cruiser races right up to full kind of big, voluminous Perinis.
Yeah. And you even had a whole, you know, a real mix of people. But I'd say there was a really lovely vibe there, I think, because it was a kind of, you know, first of its type race. Everyone was there to have fun and to really go for it. And there was a real kind of, it's very spirited, I would say. It was really fun. And everyone that was there
Is that kind code of, for everyone got pissed?
Well, just a little bit, but not till the end. I was long gone by then. But no, it was really fun. And, you know, some great locations there as well for all these social events. Our dinner that we had there was at Rooster Farm, which was at this incredible farm kind of up in the hills with all the food being grown on site. And apparently Tom Hanks has a house in Antiparos. So I was kind of hoping that there were rumours, as there are at these things, that Tom Hanks would be there. Maybe he was undercover. I don't know. But it was a great event.
No Hanks?
No Hanks. Didn't see a Hanks. But yeah, I didn't go to the nightclub on the last night. So it's totally possible he was there and no one noticed.
I experienced physical pain.
Oh, no.
Looking at the social media coverage of this event.
Yeah.
I wasn't there and it looked amazing.
Yeah.
You know that gnawing FOMO sense in the pit of your stomach? It just looked awesome.
Yeah.
I was gutted.
Yeah.
Not to be there.
I really enjoyed it. I was lucky enough to get on one of the boats, and I love that, you know, kind of flinging yourself out the side of the boat and getting absolutely drenched. And it was just, it was really, really fun. But yeah, you've been having fun of your own. Where have you been?
Well, so that was the first iterate. Well, that was the inaugural Cyclades Cup.
Yes, absolutely.
But there are plans. It will be an annual event, right?
Yeah. And I think they can only go up from here, to be honest. They already had, you know, they had a great, like you say, a really great crew of yachts came on board to join right from the very beginning. Lots of people, I'm sure, would be interested for further years, as well as some great sponsors. So I think it can only get bigger and better, really. And obviously, we're excited to kind of see how it grows and to join them on that journey.
Awesome. And yeah, because it was not marketed an awful lot a long way before the event. Because I remember we were obviously worked very closely with Ilya when she announced it, and when she told us about it. The concept initially was that long before the event itself. So the fact that they managed to get such a strong fleet there for the first edition is really, really amazing. So with 12 months of runway basically before the next one.
Yeah.
It's just going to get bigger and better, isn't it?
And I mean, there were people there as well. I think it was Baron D., One of the yachts I was speaking to says, oh, you know, we haven't done a regatta for years. And I really thought my owner would say no to this, but I put it forward to them and they were delighted. So there were boats there that weren't normal regatta boats.
And the concept was that it was a bit more, it was lower key, was a bit more amateur,
yeah, say. Although having said that, like you said, there were some pretty serious, not everyone was not taking it seriously. You know, it was, I think if you were competitive, there were enough people there to challenge you in that respect.
Yeah. All tastes catered for, sounds like. But yeah, that venue looks spectacular. And watching the boats cruise around Antiparos, yeah. I'm over it now, but it's taken a good...
You don't sound over
it. It's taken a good week and a half.
You've got a year to get over it, Stu.
To recover. So yeah, so the reason I didn't attend that was because... I headed off to the US. I was in North America and we did an event in New York last week at the New York Yacht Club, in the ward room of the New York Yacht Club, which was fantastic for a client of ours called Habacoa. So Habacoa, you can read a bit more about it on our website, basically. It will become the biggest super yacht marina in the North American basin when complete. Work's going to start, I think, within the year. The ground will be broken. All permissions are in place, which is always the nightmare for any kind of new development of this scale, just trying to get all the environmental permits, all the planning permits, all that kind of stuff. They have all of that. So now it's just a case of, dotting the final I's and crossing the final T's before they can get spades in the ground. But it's a really exciting development. Zaha Hadid, yacht club, hotels, spa, beach clubs, a new yacht club. Lots of depth for some very big boats. And it's in a part of the Bahamas that's really promising for a development like this, because it's kind of in the main thoroughfare between southern Florida and the Caribbean. So in the southern part of the Abaco. So it's beautifully positioned. So we've been helping Habacoa kind of just get the word out by staging various lunches and dinners and round tables with owners, reps, yacht managers, charter brokers, all sorts really from across the industry, just to make sure as many people learn about it as possible.
And have they started taking, can people sort of put their name down for berths and things from now, or is that
not
too early?
Not yet. It's still a bit too early, but it won't be terribly long before people can start making reservations. Yeah, but it's very, very exciting. And then, so we went from New York up to Newport, the kind of the spiritual home of sailing in North America. I love Newport. It's such a special place. Weather was great, although it did rain on the last day. But apart from that, it was fantastic. It was very warm. And we did an event, a dinner at the new Sailing Museum, which has just recently opened in, they call it Thames Street,
right.
Instead of Thames Street.
Okay.
In downtown Newport. It's a brilliant new facility, the Sailing Museum, all volunteer funding, and it's got the Sailing Yacht Hall of Fame's there as well. And they've just done their latest induction of sailing legends into that. And we were very lucky, because at this dinner, Gary Jobson came along. And for those of you who love your America's Cup history, Gary Jobson called tactics on Ted Turner's winning attempt at the America's Cup. And then is a very well-known sailing commentator and sailing writer. So he came along and said a few words, which was great in a place like that to hear from an genuine America's Cup great about the Cup, American Magic, the New York Yacht Club's attempt to win the old mug back, and his thoughts on the state of sailing generally. It was really, really nice evening.
And what kind of a kind of crowd were there in terms of guests?
Owners. It was an owners club event, so we had some brilliant club members come along in a brand new space in Newport. It was lovely. It was all timed to coincide with the start of the Newport Bermuda race, which kicked off that day. The event was on Friday. The race started about 2 p.m. that same afternoon. And for some boats, as we're recording this on Tuesday, it's only just ending now for the slower members of the Newport Bermuda fleet. So the fastest boats get there in a bit over 3 days, but there's still some people out there tacking their way to Bermuda.
Heading down.
Yeah, but I imagine the party when they get there will be lots of fun. So that's been the last week and a half for me, back in the office now, and I wanted to flag, whilst we have your attention, the new DocWalk salary survey, which is newly released. So this is an annual survey of superyacht crew, basically. We need as many people to take part as possible to produce some really reliable data about the state of superyacht crew salaries. If you head to docwalk.com, you can enter there. It's a really simple electronic survey. It's been going since 1997, so it's the longest standing survey of its kind, and it is essential reading for, you know, for captains, owners and crew when you're looking to, you know, get a new job, get an upgrade in your position or change boats or whatever it is. It's makes for, you know, a great benchmark against your peers. So the results will be published in a September 2024 issue of DocWalk, so don't miss that. But before you do that, obviously, before you read it, take part, head to the website, have a look at it, enter some detail. It doesn't take terribly long. It's all anonymous, so no one knows how much money you're earning. And yeah, help us shed some light and make as clear as possible what has happened over the last 12 months to crew salaries. It would be very much appreciated if you could contribute. Meanwhile, back in London, you met with the Alicia team.
Yeah. Speaking of people hiring lots of people and salaries and everything, I think I met with the Alicia team.
So let's spell, because we often get emails, don't we?
Oh, spelling it out. Okay. Things. I would do this with phonetic alphabet, but I'm not sure how to say it. So Alicia, U-L-Y-S-S-I-A. I probably should know what their name is. It's probably some kind of god or something that I don't know, Ulyssia.
I'll hastily Google it.
Next time I'm on the podcast, I'll have answers for you, listeners. But, you know, an incredible project. And yes, they'll be hiring lots of staff in the coming years. So this is a kind of 320 meters. And I never know what to call these things without getting in trouble with someone.
Ulyssia, apparently, is a girl's name meaning wrathful. Ulyssia is an ultra-rare feminization of the stately presidential name Ulysses.
I feel like there's got to be a reason why they didn't mention it's named after someone wrathful. I think either we've got that wrong or that wasn't the intention with the naming of the boat.
Well, according to the website nameberry.com, I mean, who's to argue with nameberry.com? That is live, terrible research.
Yeah, live, terrible research brought to you, listeners, live on air.
Oh, well, also apparently from sevenreflections.com, it also means you have talent, charm, and luck.
Okay, well, let's go with that, shall we?
That's a bit nicer.
That one, that's what it's named after.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this is a 320-meter yacht that will have private apartments on it, similar to the, you know, similar but not similar to yachts like Njord and the World that have come before.
Well, Njord never got off the ground. The World obviously has been cruising the oceans for a number of decades and is, as far as I'm aware about the world of private residence ships, is really the only successful model of anything like this of any significant size. I've been on the World a few times now. It's quite impressive.
Really? The people that love that seem to love it.
Yeah.
But I think they're going after quite a different crowd with this.
This is a much bigger version.
Yeah.
This is kind of, yeah, bigger, newer, obviously, because the World's a bit older now.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely huge and it won't launch for a while, but it will have, just when you start talking about the facilities on board, it's hard to imagine there's anything on there, you know, that you could want for anything that isn't there. There's going to be two helicopters, seven restaurants, private chefs that will come to your apartment and cook. I should have said, yeah, one or two bedroom apartments that you can buy and bigger than that, starting at $10 million each. There'll be kind of a food market selling local food from different destinations that the yacht's going to, a big Cheno, that kind of fancy Swiss make spa. There's even things like a dentist, an MRI scanner. There's going to be a lecture theater with visiting academics talking about the different areas that the boat's traveling to, the history. They really want people to kind of engage with where they're visiting. So if you're going to Japan, on the way there, you'll be having lectures from experts in Japanese history, Japanese culture, that sort of thing. And then, you know, medical, there's going to be a dentist, there's an MRI scanner. I think anything you could possibly have wrong with you can be dealt with on board. And then just loads of facilities like paddle tennis courts. There's a golf simulator. There's a race simulator. There's even like a giant bird that kids can sit on as they come into each destination. It will show them flying into Japan or flying into Antarctica.
In this bird simulator here, what on earth is a... So that's it.
Yeah, that's the bird simulator. They sit on a massive bird and it will show them flying in. Because I thought it was interesting, especially with the world as a comparison. So they're looking at... They're sort of hand-picking the people for this project. They say they've got loads of demand for these apartments. They're not just signing anyone and everyone up to them because they realize that the value in this is in the community. So they want people that love adventure, people that care about where they're visiting and the imprint they leave. And also that means kind of young families, and they're making an effort to kind of recruit people from all over the world rather than just, you know, filling up their sales book immediately with the first people that come to them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So there's a lot of emphasis on the community they're building there. They got a bit of not a grilling, but what I went to was a kind of press event, and people were talking to them a lot about, okay, well, if people buy these apartments for owners, typically, they said, but, you know, it depends who they are, but they typically purchase an apartment, hold it for 6 years, and end up spending about 4 months on board a year. So there was some concern about, well, how do you know, if you don't know when people are going to come on board, how do you make sure that it's not a ghost ship and that the month I come on board, no one else has decided to visit their yacht? But people can let their guests and their friends use their apartment. So I can say, Stu, I'm not going to be in Antarctica. Why don't you stay in my suite? But they can't rent them out or sell them on, because that then kind of ruins the model. But it was, the team, so Francesca Mizzio has done the design, or that people can, the interior design, people can bring their own designers on board if they want to kind of customize beyond what she's done. But she's done all the kind of communal spaces and things, which look very lovely.
And Espen's involved as well. Espen Oino's had a hand in the design as well.
Yeah, and there are various other kind of big name interior and exterior designers they've partnered with that people can choose to go to if they particularly like their style for their apartment. But the team they came across as kind of super slick. Every question someone had about, you know, what the yacht was doing, or what about this, or what about this, they had an answer for. I think they're very experienced, and everything you could kind of put to them, I think that they'd learnt a lot from their kind of previous endeavours together. Boat is going to run off methanol, but it's got kind of, I was saying, well, how about all these other solutions and other things in the pipeline? They've sort of future-proofed the engineering of it. So there's space in the hull should they want to, you know, upgrade the systems as and when they become available, and, you know, cut the emissions further in further years to come. So one to watch, really. It certainly looks, it's one of those things that, you know, every time they were talking about these trips, I was thinking that would be incredible to go on. There's still the question, well, you know, would you not rather go to those places on your own? But I think for a lot of people, it will enable them to go to more adventurous destinations. And EOS, obviously, we know, well, they're their kind of explorations company. They'll be coming on board. So it's a really interesting project, and one we'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah. So we've spoken a bit about these private resident ships, or really only the world in the past, because we've done a bit of work with them. I really get it. I get it, because, you know, you might want to go to Antarctica, but you don't want the hassle of sending your own boat there. So if you've got an apartment on the world and you know it's going there, what a great way to experience it, with all the comforts you'd expect on a very well-appointed yacht, and then some, because, you know, if you've got a 40, 50 meter yacht, you haven't got paddle tennis courts, a golf simulator, a race simulator, bird simulator on board. So.
Yeah, that's the real USP, isn't it? All that money, and what does it get you? A bird simulator. There you can't get one anywhere else.
Money can't buy it.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I really do get the appeal of this as a kind of a low hassle bolt on, perhaps, to your traditional cruising in your own boat. Or if, you know, the world obviously appeals to a slightly older crowd, people who have got out of yachting but still want the same kind of adventure, you know, with as little hassle as possible.
And I think it will be going forward, it will be fairly democratic, and that we were asking them kind of how would you decide where to go. And, you know, people that own these apartments will be able to kind of vote and put their ideas forward, and they can club together and kind of lobby if they want to go somewhere specific.
That's
and,
how the world works.
Yeah. Right?
So it is a, so the, that's an understood model in this private residentship world. The boat's residents vote some years ahead about the itinerary and the program. So they all have an equity, some equity in the decision-making process, which I think is a great way of doing it. Instead of just being told, here, we're going here, there, and everywhere, they say, well, you know, we haven't done Japan in a few years. Let's go back to Japan. So yeah, I get it. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was super interested with that. And another new project, I'm doing lots of investigating new things at the moment. So then tomorrow I'm off for a flying visit to Vienna to visit F-List, which some of you might have heard of through their work in the private jet world and the interior residences world. Anyway, they are starting to specialize in yachts. They launched back in May an arm that was entirely dedicated to super yachts. For the moment, it's all been quite hush-hush about what projects they're working on and what exactly they're doing. But they've invited us over there to go and take a look, to go around with the CEO. And they partner with a lot of people who we know and whose work we already love. So I'm excited to see what they're working on. And they've also got a sort of innovation hub there for sort of materials in development. Lots of other designers I know, like Winch, for example, they have incredible rooms and departments dedicated to finding great suppliers and manufacturers of materials that are sustainable or interesting. But these guys are actually developing their own for use in their projects. So I'm excited to see what that is.
And you get to go to Vienna.
And I get to go to Vienna. I don't know much about Vienna apart from that song. So, and the fact they do lots of coffee and cake.
How does it go?
I'm not singing. You can sing it.
I think Katja might be the only one that's ever sung on the podcast before.
I considered it then for a brief split second. I thought, do I really have... No, I'm not singing.
Thanks for that. Well, I look forward to hearing about how Vienna goes.
Yeah, and, maybe I'll sing it if it goes really well.
If it goes really well. Back on the podcast next week. I wanted to send some congratulations, meanwhile, to a good friend of the business and a good friend of mine, Michael Beattie, who has just been appointed the new manager of Superyacht UK, which is, of course, the representative body of the UK's superyacht industry. So Michael, although I've always called him Beetle, everyone who knows him calls him Beetle.
Yeah.
It's very strange for me calling him Michael. He was obviously formerly commercial director at Boat International. And this new role will see him oversee the promotion of Superyacht UK members, implement the association's annual business plan, and lead its membership and governance activities. And we'll also see him around the boat shows, because he'll be representing Superyacht UK at domestic and international events to ensure members' interests are being well represented. So just from everyone at Boat and from me personally, I think Beetle, congrats, mate. That's fantastic news. I know you'll be a huge success in that role. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, he'll be brilliant at that.
All right, let's move on to some brokerage picks. You've cheated by choosing two.
Yeah, I have. No shame here. I know I'm supposed to pick one, I picked two. But I'll tell you why. Because I'm aware...
I want some heavy justification.
Yeah, I'm aware. I always pick a sailing yacht, and normally a kind of old sailing yacht. It's just like, oh, change the record, shut up. But I went on with the intention of picking a new, cool, you know, amazing super yacht. But then I saw this boat. And I imagine lots of owners come to this when they, you know, there's a boat that takes their heart. And so I'm going to mention it anyway, even though it's not my official pick. So unofficially, I did happen to like the look of Mariette of 1915. Mariette of 1915. Sorry. Which is just a really pretty boat. It's a 38-meter twin-masted schooner built by Herreshoff in the United States in 1915. So she's been privately used for a number of decades and has recently undergone a multi-million dollar refit at Pendennis, who we know do brilliant things. She's won loads of regattas over the years. So if you wanted to kind of put it to the test, she's got a good track record. Max speed of 11 knots and a cruising speed of 8 knots. Inside, it's just quite sweet. It's quite a cute boat, I'd say. And it looks like a boat where you'd have lots of kind of lovely, lovely, happy adventures and happy times. It's not palatial, though. It's room for 6 guests.
Well, in 1915.
People were smaller.
People were.
You're quite tall. You'd probably only fit in like half the boat, but it's...
But volume, I don't think they had quite the same obsession with volume.
No,
exactly. As we do now.
But no, it's a very sweet little boat. And that is... It's a bargain, if you ask me, at €7 million.
I mean, Mariette of 1915 is a true pedigree classic. And for lovers of classic boats, she's obviously well known to them. Been well looked after, from what I understand. And yeah, would be a welcome addition to anyone who competes regularly at Le Voile de Saint-Tropez or the Antigua Classics or any other, you know, good regatta around the world. I think Mariette of 1915 would be a great buy.
Absolutely. But
she's not your official pick.
She's not my official pick. We're not. I don't even know why we're talking about it, because the one I did officially pick, which I also think is a really great yacht, is H by Azimut, which is 35.3 meters, built last year, so very modern.
Age of 2023.
But similar feeling, that's beautifully designed and a nice size. It's got a displacement deplaning hull, which reduces the fuel consumption and emissions by up to 30% compared to standard hull designs. So big fan of that. More space, got space for 10 guests, and the suites are a bit more palatial. They've got 4 ensuite guest cabins on the lower deck, 2 double VIP suites aft, and 2 twin cabins forward of those. And then forward of the guest suites is where the crew mess and the accommodation is, and that's for up to 5 crew. But for me, the main selling point is just the design, which has a beautiful interior by Alberto Mancini, and it's all kind of super harmonious, lots of kind of neutrals, lots of marble, lots of curves, but it just feels very kind of relaxed and kind of chilled. But also just these amazing social deck spaces. I was going to run through kind of all the details of it. I think it's better you take a look on the site for yourself. But for me, there is, in particular, there's a glass jacuzzi with a beautiful view out over the ocean. And I was like, oh, I could totally see myself hopping in the glass jacuzzi, nice glass of rosé, nice bottle of rosé, looking out over the ocean. And there are just loads of little kind of beautiful nooks with beautiful views out on deck for spending all your time. So I think that's a great boat. Slightly more expensive at 16,500,000 euros, but much bigger and much newer.
And she is listed with Burgess. Okay.
You've gone for another Azimut, no?
Well, one from the Azimut Bonetti stable. I've gone for 44-meter Bonetti Groover.
Sorry, the name. Would we be keeping the name Groover?
I love that name. Ooh. So Groover is asking 14 point, it obviously appealed to me.
Yeah.
As a terrible dancer. She's asking $14.25 million US dollars, and she's lying in West Palm Beach, Florida. She's got a lovely fetching gray hull and is listed with IYC. I think you've already nailed why I mainly chose this
the name.
Because of the name. But then I got thinking about the old adage, the two best days of a yacht owner's life is the day they buy it and the day they sell it. And my assumption is you can always sell a Bonetti. I mean, you can always sell a Bonetti.
Yeah.
And so when I'm sitting with brokers at various events, I joke, you know, what's the dream listing? And the answer invariably is kind of a 40-meter, 10-year-old Bonetti that's been well-maintained. It's just the rump of the market. You know, they're pretty easy boats to shift. So this piqued my curiosity. I thought, okay, well, you know, does the data support that assumption?
Does it?
Well, we'll get to that. So I looked at how long certain brands' boats stayed on the market on average before being sold. So if you look at the market as a whole, for instance, of all the boats sold in 2023, the average total time on the market was 463 days.
That's less than I would have thought, 463 days.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But I guess you have some that sell like that.
Some that sell like that. In 2022, the average time boats took to sell was 498 days. That's of all boats sold in 2022. So let's say in the last few years, superyachts on average took a little under 18 months to sell, which corresponds to what you kind of hear anecdotally at the yacht shows and around the pontoons, etc. When you break that down by brand, the averages shift a little. See, I figured Bonetti's would be near the top for being a low average number of days on the market before they sold. But I was wrong. Not terribly wrong, but I was wrong. So I looked at all sales over the last 5 years, all brokerage sales over the last 5 years, broken down by brand, because I wanted to know, on average, which brand's boats stayed on the market the least amount of time. And it turns out, yeah, I was a little bit surprised by some of these, but it makes for quite interesting reading. So Westport is at number one. So there were 72 Westports sold over the last 5 years. On an average, those Westports stayed on the market for 317 and a half days each, which is the best record of any brand's boats that sold over 50 units in the last 5 years.
Wow.
Next on the list was San Lorenzo. So 155 San Lorenzos have been sold over the last 5 years, with a total average time on the market of 345 days. Next was Custom Line. 72 Custom Lines sold over the last 5 years. Average time on the market was 353 days. Then Ferretti Yachts, 57 units sold, 402 days average time on the market. Princess was in at 54 hulls sold. 54 Princesses sold on the brokerage market over the last 5 years. Average time on the market, 420 days. Then Sunseeker, 116 units sold on the brokerage market over the last 5 years. 488 days on the market on average. In seven was Overmarine, 69 Overmarine sold over the last 5 years. 498 days on average on the market for those boats. Benetti was in eighth place. 125 Benettis over 24 meters have been sold over the on the brokerage market in the last 5 years, with an average time on the market of 579 days. Then in ninth place was Azimut, 85 units sold on the brokerage market, 594 days on the market. And in 10th place, Fedship. 60 Fedships have been sold on the brokerage market between 2019 and 2024, with an average time on the market of 626 days.
So that, I'm surprised by some things there and not others. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised that Westport is top, because I think the people that go for Westports, of the owners I've met, they know exactly what they want. They've seen exactly what they want. So when the right one comes up, it's a quick decision for them. I think the kind of people that go for Westports are kind of practical people that want a boat that does what they want them to do. They're not necessarily that fussed about customizations and, you know, kind of hugely wacky personalizations to the boats. I'm surprised that Sunseeker is not a bit higher up, because I would have put them in not the same category, but a similar category, and that people that buy Sunseekers kind of are looking for a particular style and a particular, you know, a particular kind of boat and could act on that quite quickly. It makes sense to me that some of the ones that do bigger boats, they sit around for longer, because it's obviously a bigger investment.
Yeah, Fedship's more expensive, bigger. I get that they tend to, you know, it takes a little longer.
It's still lower down
than
I would have thought, though, Fedship.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess, you know, if we're talking about really big, you know, super expensive yachts, and again, much more personalized, then yeah, it's interesting, though, it is.
Yeah, I figured Benetti would be right at the top.
You got time to save up for Groover then?
So obviously they are averages. I just want to reinforce that point. So, you know, that could run, you know, that's boats built at any time, but only sold over the last 5 years. So, but, you know, but it's still fairly instructive on the amount of time, you know, boats from these brands tend to stay on the market on average. But I think Groover is going to beat the average.
He snapped up.
I believe in her. She was built in GRP in 2009 and refitted in 23-24, and comes with a fetching Bannenbergen rail interior. She sleeps 12 guests in 5 cabins and has, unusually for a 44-meter yacht, a lift running through 3 decks. Lots of glossy-looking cherry wood, which the US market favors, and she is ABS classed. So Groover is my pick. And as a reminder, she is asking $14.25 million US and is lying in West Palm, Florida. Alrighty, let's get to the headlines. What's up first?
Okay, let's look at some news then. First up is these fires that have been in Greece. This is the news that 13 crew members of the 53.8-meter Mariotti charter yacht Persephone 1 have been accused of arson after appearing at the criminal court in Piraeus, Greece on Sunday. Now, the fireworks were allegedly launched from the superyacht and sparked a forest fire on the Greek island of Hydra on Friday evening, which consequently destroyed the island's only pine forest. It's very sad. The crew were arrested by arson unit investigators in the fire brigade when they docked near Athens on Saturday. And a witness report collected by the Hydra Port Authority from the captain of a nearby yacht testified that the blaze was started by fireworks originating from the suspect's vessel on Friday evening. The blaze itself was brought under control in the early hours of Saturday morning, but with no road access to the beach, firefighters fought the flames from the sea while helicopters dropped water from above. According to the country's Minister of Climate Crisis and Civil Protection, 6 aeroplanes and 2 teams of firefighters were on the scene. So where we're up to now with this story is that the crew are expected to enter a plea by Wednesday, tomorrow. So by the time you're listening to this, that will hopefully have happened, but you can track that on our site. We'll be updating the story as the announcements come out. And the boat's been temporarily held by authorities pending the investigation. As a bit of background, according to the news outlet ANA, fireworks are actually banned during high temperature days in the area. Legislation for arson and ecological destruction has recently been toughened in Greece. I guess this is why.
Yeah, I mean, not great, this, is it? Just when you're trying to safeguard the reputation of the superyacht industry, a bunch of people set fire to a precious pine forest on Hydra.
Yeah.
Just a really bad look and deeply stupid. Yeah. Just, and it's all over the news. It's everywhere. So, like Charlotte said, we'll keep you updated. But if fireworks were banned, I mean, what were they doing? What were they doing?
Yeah. And it seems unlikely that they wouldn't have known that.
Yeah. Well, they should have done if they didn't. Next up, we have some news. The Suez Canal Authority has announced a 50% reduction in transit fees for yachts less than 300 tons. So the lower rate is set to go into effect from the 1st of July this year and will last until the 1st of October. This is obviously an attempt to encourage more yachts into the Red Sea. Although, you know, July is not the best time to be cruising into the Red Sea because it's hotter than the sun. The decision was made in support of the Egypt International Boat Show, now in its 6th edition, which is running from the 11th to the 14th of July. Hopefully it will lead to a bit of a boost and get more boats to that show. Obviously, we've got a story coming up in the magazine about how tourism and superyacht traffic in the Red Sea has been affected by the crisis in the southern Red Sea and around Yemen and Houthi attacks on commercial ships and the like. So that's a great piece. We'll be coming out. I'm looking at you questioningly, Charlotte.
In our September issue.
In our September issue. So don't miss that one. It's a great piece of writing. But yeah, I mean, look, the Suez Canal is one of the biggest barriers to entry for any opportunity to cruise in the Red Sea. You know, speaking to captains that have done the transit don't speak massively favorably generally of it. And it's expensive. Look, it's expensive. Mm. So, you know, that's going to always be a challenge for those big Red Sea developments. You know, if the future of the Red Sea is a superyacht future, which, you know, many in that region want it to be, then this has got to be sorted out. And, you know, powers in that region definitely have the capacity and the ability to do that. So, you know, it's one we keep an eye on constantly. I often get calls from marketing agencies kind of saying things like, you know, we're working with various authorities to get more superyachts into the Red Sea. And I say, well, you know, you've got to make Suez easier. You do that, that's a big tick in the box. So we'll see what happens. With all those giga developments happening on the Red Sea coast, that's going to have to be sorted out.
I think what's interesting that about that as well is something that the article that we're running that you referenced coming up mentioned is that how much the kind of noise around these things, you know, even if these attacks aren't happening on superyachts, even if they're not happening in the areas people are traveling to, the general kind of unrest, concern, you know, background of all of that is quite off-putting and
creates a vibe.
Yeah. So anything positive they can do, I think, to kind of counteract that is going to be a step in the right direction for sure.
100%. Last but not least, we have news of a new dopamine.
Yeah, new positive news, which is that Italian shipyard Baglietto has launched the fourth hull in its T-52 series named Dopamine, as you said. She's going to join sister ships Arc of Fate, Infinity and Akula on the water. The 52-metre superyacht was sold in 2021 with the buyer introduced by Marine Marketing. Exterior design is by Francesco Pascalski, while the interior is by Studio Vafjardist. The series' standout features include the 24-metre-long sun deck, which houses sun lounging areas and an infinity pool, and Baglietto say it's unrivaled on the market, which is quite a claim.
Baglietto's sun decks are famous for being vast. So yeah. You know, this is a lot of deck on top of that boat.
Elsewhere, the open stern features a beach club across 3 levels and a second swimming pool that can be concealed to extend the deck surface. Over on the upper deck, there are floor-to-ceiling windows which open on 3 sides to create an alfresco lounge with a dining area. And the yacht is powered by two Caterpillar C-32 engines and has a cruising speed of 11 knots and a maximum speed of 16 knots.
I think Dopamine's a great name for a boat.
Yeah, better than Groover.
No, well, we can disagree there. But the built for a very tall owner, so I'm expecting ceiling height to be vast. And the T-52 has proven a very successful model for Balietto. One of Dopamine's sister ships picked up the World Superyacht Award a little earlier this year in Venice. So, really good development. And Balietto very, very busy, as we discussed in previous podcasts. I haven't caught up on the latest order book, but they said 11 or 13 or something boats on the order book last time I checked, which is really, really good. So congrats to the owner of Dopamine on getting that boat delivered. Yeah, I look forward to standing in it and feeling small because I've met the owner of this one.
And not hitting your head.
And he is a tall, tall unit.
Really?
Last but not least, let's have a look at some data, which, as ever, is brought to you by Boat Pro, the super industry's leading market intelligence service. And this week, we're talking about Riva. And that's because the 15th Riva Raduni, also known as the Riva Trophy, will happen next weekend. And Raphael, our data guru, will take part. He's done it a few times now. He loves it. Basically, they cruise a bunch of beautiful rivers between Monaco and Saint-Tropez, and it's organized by the Monaco Boat Service.
That sounds like an insanely glam event.
It looks really cool.
Does it look as cool and amazing as you imagine it will?
Yeah. I mean, I've never done it. I've never been lucky enough to do it, but Raphael adores it. I mean, it's cruising classic rivers on the south coast of France.
I was just thinking, Riva, tick, Saint-Tropez, tick. Yeah. You know, got to be some good photo opportunities there, surely.
Absolutely. Obviously, that's more classic, smaller Rivas. So we thought, but we'd have a look at the bigger Riva fleet. These are Rivas over 24 meters. And to date, that shipyard has delivered 195 yachts with an average length of snip under 30 meters, 29.4 meters. Most are semi-custom, but they've done two full custom Rivas. So the Riva story, as many people know, started way back in 1842, but it wasn't until the 1950s that people really started paying attention when Carlo Riva took over the yard. And obviously the brand is known worldwide for its stunning aquarama built between 1962 and 1996. So 769 aquaramas were delivered between those years. In 2000, Riva became part of the Ferretti Group. And of those 195 super yachts it's built, most sit between the 24 and 30 meter mark. And then there's 49 between 30 and 40 meters. So, yeah, their boats are getting bigger all the time, but the majority of boats are in that kind of rump between 24 and 30 meters. They're all motor yachts, and most are semi-custom, as mentioned. And the boom in production of bigger Rivas really started in 2010. So the fleet is therefore quite young. But, after the Ferretti Group took control of the brand, they really started pumping up the bigger boats. And so the evolution is for ever larger Rivas. And the current flagship is the 50-meter with three hulls delivered so far. There is a new flagship in development, though, the Riva 54-meter, which will be delivered in 2025. In other Riva news, actually, just announced in June, the Italian shipyard and design studio Officina Italiana Design announced the renewal of their exclusive collaboration contract for a further 5 years. The partnership's been in place since 1994, and the new contract will run until 2030. 190 of the 195 Rivas above 24 meters that have been delivered were designed by Officina Italiana Design. So a very fruitful partnership for both those brands.
Yeah, I mean, Riva's such an iconic brand. And what I find so interesting is the challenge the Ferretti Group have had to kind of, you know, take them from these much smaller, as you say, kind of classic Rivas and kind of, you know, grow the size of that while not alienating the client base. And I think they've done that because they seem to be, you know, just growing the brand and taking orders for more and more of them. And they've been very successful in kind of keeping the essence of what makes a Riva, while actually developing a really quite different boat.
Well, there's no more powerful brand in yachting than Riva. The brand that's cut through, it's Riva. Everyone knows a Riva.
Yeah.
And the image of, you know, Dolce Vita, 1960s, Brigitte Bardot, all that kind of stuff is indelibly part of the culture.
And you know, we read stories of brands like that all the time that have then been lost to history and for whatever reason have kind of, you know, stayed captured in time. And, you know, that's an awkward transition to take a brand that was famous in the 50s and 60s and try and reinvent it on a much larger scale. So well, it's
there is an equivalent. So Chris Craft of similar vintage, United States builder, also very well known for building gorgeous runabouts. They did build some bigger boats, but never kind of seemed to manage that transition into genuine superyacht territory. They, Chris Craft, still build gorgeous boats, but, you know, smaller ones. Mm-hmm. Riva, similarly aged, known for building gorgeous small boats, have kind of navigated that step up into superyacht territory. And I suppose credit to that mainly has to go to the management, the Fretti Group, who threaded the styling and design ethos up into bigger craft.
Yeah.
And have done it very, very successfully, as we have just learned. And that brings us to a close.
That's the end.
Thanks, Charlotte.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. This has been a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.